Welcome to Overcoming Distractions. This is the place where distracted adults, entrepreneurs, and busy professionals grab knowledge, inspiration, and encouragement to get focused, overcome obstacles, and thrive. If you are an adult with ADHD, you are in the right place. But don't worry, because all types of brains are welcome. Each week, Dave helps you navigate the world of adult ADHD, including productivity, focus, burnout, and more. You'll always walk away with action items you can use. Are you ready? Here is your host, author of the best-selling books Overcoming Distractions and Overcoming Burnout, Dave Greenwood.
All right, folks, we are back with Jeff Gibbard and Sarah Ohanesson. And if you remember a few weeks ago, if you go back, we were talking about how different brains work together. And Jeff and Sarah work together on certain projects to help different brains work together. And I thought we had a great conversation about how you guys work together and the benefits to embarking and being successful on projects and knowing each other's brains and being able to go into an organization. And I thought that was really cool. So folks, if you are interested in that episode, make sure you go back a few, it's probably four or five episodes ago, and check that out, because we had some fun. We had some common ground and a fish called Wanda, which is just one of my favorite movies. I know it was Jeff's. So, but we're going to dig in. I'm going to get right to this because we were talking before I hit the record button about I'm negative about negativity. And I know sometimes things don't come off as negative. But I think a lot of times there are myths about ADHD and productivity. And I think a lot of people, and I get it, totally get it, but I think we have these knee-jerk reactions to certain techniques where we just say, that doesn't work, this doesn't work. I tried that for 3 seconds, it didn't work. And I'm here to say that we need to give things a chance. So that's what we're going to talk about today. But you guys, I want to... And I want to talk just briefly about the negativity, or what I think I and other people may perceive as negativity. But I think there's a lot of content on Twitter, TikTok, Instagram, where we point out the certain negative behaviors or habits that many of us, you know, and we're going to talk about to-do lists in a minute, but the to-do list doesn't work, or I lose my car keys every day, or I lock the door and I left my keys on the other side of the door, or things like that. But where I have a little bit of a challenge with that content is it falls off the cliff right there. And we don't necessarily discuss how can I not lose my car keys every day. So in your opinion, guys, why have we let these content platforms, influence our behaviors and habits? That's a long-winded question, but
Sarah, why don't you kick us off on it?
Yeah, I mean, I think we see it a lot where these softwares or these technologies or these new, you know, platforms that are available to us, these new apps come about. And I think the sales and marketing teams do a really good job of selling these platforms and these tools. And so what we often see is people kind of drink the Kool-Aid, they get excited about it, they dive into it. And then a week later, they're going, it doesn't work. So therefore, this thing's dead, the to-do list is dead, whatever it is. And so I think it really influences our behavior because we put so much stock in this thing, this tool, this app is going to save me and my life's going to be forever different. And Jeff and I have talked at length about this because the tool isn't going to save you, right? The app isn't going to save you. That is not the thing. It's more about what's happening personally. And can you manage the tool? Can you manage the software? And really having a productivity system or a personal system behind, how are you actually going to manage the app? So it's these tools and softwares are greatly influencing our behavior, but I think sometimes at a disservice, and then people are, really into it and then really disappointed when it, I'm quoting, doesn't work. And it's more about, well, you need to figure out how to make it work for you. And so that's what we really try to do in our work is figure out, you know, there's different brain types, there's different personalities, there's different work styles and roles within an organization at play here. How are we going to make the system behind the tool really work for the organization that we're working with?
I mean, do we give up too easy?
So, sorry, I want to jump on something that Sarah said because the word stuck out to me. And if I don't say it now, I'll forget it. she said disappointed. And when you asked the question, the first thing that came to me was, you know, specifically with regard to ADHD creators on these platforms and the negativity that they may be putting out with regard to the use of systems or tools that Sarah's talking about and sort of the promises that were made to them. Oh, just use the bullet journal. And I think a lot of the disappointment comes as a negative reaction to however long you've been diagnosed with ADHD or not, hearing from neurotypical people some form of, well, why don't you just ... Right. Yeah. So the expectation that we can just do whatever the thing is that anybody else does. And then we look at the marketing claims of a tool like Monday, or we look at, you know, we're getting, you know, ads targeted us from Asana or this or that. And we just say, well, it doesn't work. Right. And I think part of that is that we've been sold an idea that everything will just be easy. And I think a lot of people who have ADHD, when they have that realization that they have ADHD and that they have certain unique struggles or challenges that they're going through, I think there's a lot of like pent up disappointment and a lot of pent up anger that comes along with that, because it's steeped in years of potential shame around not being able to just ... use this thing, do this thing, try to-do list, whatever. We've tried so many different things and it hasn't worked. So I think there's a sort of learned helplessness from that, of these different tools that weren't built for us in the first place, these systems that weren't built for us in the first place, not coming through. We're disappointed. We're a little ashamed. We're a little angry. We're a little embarrassed. And I think that's why you see that come through so hard.
Hey gang, we will be right back with the podcast, but I want to briefly tell you about my extremely affordable time management program for those of us with ADHD. As an entrepreneur with ADHD myself, I've had to be laser focused on getting the most out of my days. And I put everything that has worked for me as a busy entrepreneur into this program. I've had to juggle clients, new business, networking, and of course, family commitments, and it's all in here. The fact is, I go right back to the basics, and it's easy to follow. Time and energy management should not be complex, and that's how this program is designed. So check out overcomingdistractions.com/get-more-done. That's overcomingdistractions.com/get-more-done. As I hear you, it almost sounds like maybe that we haven't taken full advantage of a support system, however that looks. So if we are dropped a certain productivity app, you know, like you guys use, or a software program, or you're a creator and you're learning Photoshop or some video editing software, and yes, you are just sit down at a desk and it's dropped in front of you. You're right. There's no way that you are going to be able to tackle that in just a just do it type of scenario versus taking the time to learn it and find out how it works for you, but also take advantage of a support system like you guys, or actually reading the directions, right?
Reading the directions. That's hilarious. Well, I think bringing up Creative Suite is all good. I think bringing up Creative Suite is a really interesting example, though, because, you know, you look at that versus task management. And I think whether you're on any end of the spectrum of neurodiversity or neurotypicality, and you're using something like Creative Suite, Illustrator, Photoshop, whatever, it's going to work roughly the same for each person. You have a photo, you're trying to adjust the levels, maybe the colors, it works the same way. But a task management software, to-do lists, project management, note-taking, the way that your brain works changes what that tool is actually all about. And again, I think something like Photoshop, it's pretty much the same tool, I think, regardless of what brain type you have. There's probably some differences that I'm unaware of. And for anybody that's listening, sorry if I'm overlooking those, but I think a task management is a very clear example, because in Sarah, in our work together, Sarah and I manage, we're both very, very organized people in different ways. I'm organized chaos. She's organized organization. And we can both use the same platform, but see it through totally different eyes based upon what's comfortable for us to look at, what's comfortable for us to process, how we work. And I think specifically for people that are on my side of the neuro spectrum, is that so many of us haven't been given tools for people like us. We've been given tools for people like Sarah and told, well, just make it work. And we're like, it's not working. And that's why we give up on them. And it's not until you actually encounter someone who has a similar diagnosis as you and similar challenges as you, and they have a system that works, that you're like, oh, wow, this is like rocket fuel for me. And I think that's where you see so much of that disappointment. And I think the thing that we're in is that we're in a valley right now, because this conversation around neurodiversity is opening up in a way that it never has before. So we're seeing a lot of people coming to terms with it and having their initial reactions, some of them negative, some of them positive. And I think we're going to get to a point where we're more open about this conversation. And when it's more openly being talked about, we can get into solutions mode and be more positive about it.
I think we also have to really pay attention to learning styles and how people take in information. So this happens to us on a daily basis. One of our large clients, we're putting hundreds of their employees on Asana. And the beauty of that experience for us has been really witnessing and seeing how different people are learning this tool. So we are teaching it to everyone. But I am, and I'm kind of the primary trainer on that, is how do I have to adjust my presentation and how I'm teaching this to people based on the signs they're giving me? Some people, you know, Jeff and I can breeze through in 5 minutes. We're like, this is how it works. And they're like, great, good. I got it. Boom, done, out the door. And we never need to really work with them again.
Yeah.
Other people every single week are coming to me. Can I have another appointment with you? Can we talk about this again? So understanding some people are quick learners, slower learners. And I don't mean that in a negative way at all. It's just a different learning style. We created a whole learning center for this particular client. So those people that want to go read every single bullet point of instruction, it's there for them. Other people want a quick demo. So I think that the key that we've really found is, how are people even learning this software in the first place? That has to be quite diverse to make the onboarding be effective. We're seeing people getting lost in the training of some of these tools.
So here's a question. And if you see this in your work or dealing with the vendor, so to speak, whether it's Asana or other, do they have people within their company that work to try and maybe make some of these platforms a little more friendly to different brains? Do they consider that in their, you know, in the way they work or improve the product?
Sarah, I don't know about you, but I would think that we are that for most of the clients that we work with. We're mm-hmm. the ones that are kind of coming in and saying like, hey, have you considered this? And a lot of them go, wow, that's really cool. And usually it's someone that's like me that goes, I'm really so glad that you said that, because we're so used to not speaking up that, that, you know, it's not really an issue that's seen. It's kind of an invisible disability or an invisible aspect of inclusion. And it often gets overlooked because it's invisible. So I would say it's been very rare for us to, unless we're talking to like a small team and somebody's like right off the bat, they're like, I have ADHD and yada, yada, yada. Without that, usually it's not a thing that comes across. It's how do we get our entire workforce on this? How do we do this? And it's usually us that's going, so as an example, Sarah and I are very different. And here's how we like to do things different. So we build it for different brain types. And then somebody's like, oh, that's amazing. Thank you. Because I hate spreadsheets.
I do too.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for us, it's been about that developing that personal relationship and knowing that this is a safe place. Jeff and I are safe, and you can talk to us and you can do a sidebar conversation with us or book a meeting with one of us to say, I'm identifying with what you're saying and I need more help there. But like, I don't want to tell my manager that I'm really struggling with this. So I think too, providing that space where we're like, we told you from meeting one that Jeff and I are different. And if you need more help from one of us, or you want to talk to one of us about that, like, we're here for it. All day.
Yeah. So one of the things I sent you guys was, and I do see this quite often on like Twitter and what have you, is, you know, somebody just told me to use a to-do list. And again, there's that word just in there. Mm-hmm. Totally get that. But I think what happens is the content spreads and it influences other people's behavior, thinking, yeah, I can't use a to-do list either. Now, either they tried, or like you say, gave up quickly, or didn't try at all, or they have let maybe other voices influence what they think about what they can and cannot do. So when it comes to something as simple as a to-do list, how do you guys work with people with different brains to make one of the most basic tools of productivity effective for them?
So I'm just going to give one quick tip that we do. And then I'm actually going to turn it over to Sarah, because she works with me to help make things work. So I think she's got really good advice for the neurotypical listeners. But one of the things that I immediately identified with early on when I was trying to learn how to use to-do lists and task management software was that a real friction point that people like me struggle with to-do lists is speed. So if I have a thought, there is a ticking time bomb before that thought is completely gone. And if something interrupts before I track that and get it locked into a system, it can be lost forever. I've still got ideas that I'm hoping to remember 2-3 years later because I didn't write it down and it's still floating around in there somewhere. So what I learned is that for people who are on the more ADHD side of things, one of the most important things is you have to choose the system, or at least with the system that you use, find ways of making that system work faster so that you can get things out of your mind. So you don't have to think, well, which section do I put this in? You need like a quick inbox to get it out of your head, capture as fast as possible. So for myself, I chose a system that allows for the most rapid ability for me to capture tasks. I use Todoist personally because I have a shortcut key. I press one button on my computer and it pops up and I can just get it out of my head. And I can use shortcut keys to move it where I want if I need to, but I can also just get it right out of my head. So I would say that the important thing, and again, this goes back to like, why don't you just ... is that what most ADHD people, when they say, I can't use a to-do list, what they're really saying, what's underneath that is, I can't use a to-do list in the way that people have been trying to get me to use to-do lists for my entire life. What they're not saying is a system won't work for me. They're saying every system I've tried thus far has not worked for me. And to them, I would say systems, for me at least, has been the only thing that organizes the chaos that is swirling about in the tornado of my mind. Once I use those systems, it calms that tornado a bit. It keeps me more on point, more on task, more organized. And you just have to find the one that works for you. So don't give up the hunt. Find the one that works for you.
No, and I think that's important that you say that, is that I think some people don't take the time to find what works for them. You know, in the old days, I used to have one of those tiny little spiral notebooks you got at the grocery store, and it would be in my back pocket and there'd be a pen next to it.
Yep.
And I would pull it out and I would write stuff down. Now, for me, I'm an Evernote guy because it is on every device and yep. It syncs. So if I'm reading a book on the iPad and boom, something comes, boom, fire up Evernote. If I'm driving, I can fire up Evernote and use the voice dictation. I mean, so I have all my bases covered pretty much wherever I go, unless I'm in the middle of Alaska and just off the grid.
I can't wait to show you my system. Oh man, you're good. Cause I used to be an Evernote guy myself, and I still much love to Evernote. It was like probably my first love in note-taking. But when you see what I've built now and what I'm using now,
we definitely got to look at that. But I think your point is well taken, is that I can walk from the living room to my home office and have already forgotten about some earth-shattering idea.
Yep.
Because of the speed of the brain and the need for the speed of use of that tool.
Yep.
Yeah.
One thing I just want to point out though, because we are giving a lot of credit to certain tools, right? And the tools are amazing. I mean, Jeff and I work in these softwares tools all day, every day. So like, we love them. But the key, if you're really paying attention, is that Jeff figured out how to make it work for him. So
yes.
Out of the box, right? I always say these tools are like an oven. It's empty. Dinner's not making itself, right? You have to figure out, what are you making for dinner? You have to go to the grocery store and get those items. You have to chop them, prep them, wash them, you know, prepare them, put them together, put them in the oven. The oven's going to cook it, right? But it didn't make dinner on its own. And I think that that's a really important distinction. So Jeff is, you know, personally using Todoist. I am personally using Asana. You know, we do a lot of work on Notion and Asana for our clients. The key though, isn't necessarily the software, right? Like that's the vehicle to make this engine run. But what's happening is we're doing a lot of work to get those systems to work for us.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
My system looks very different from Jeff's, but we've taken the time to invest in what's our system personally that runs our software and our tools. And I think that that's really important. Is it just out of the box, these things are, they do a lot of really cool things, but you really have to take that time or, you know, work with someone like us to help you determine how are you going to make this tool actually work and be successful for you.
Absolutely. And just one thing I want to add to that about the tool, which is that when you understand your underlying process, which is the first part, what's your framework, what's your methodology, what's your way of doing things that runs the show. Once you have that, then you can look at the tools and what you'll see is that some better fit certain ways of working than others, but most can be made to work in one way or another that you can adapt to. So I used to be Asana for my personal task before I moved to Todoist, and I had a quick entry way of using Asana, even though out of the box, it doesn't have that. I found ways that I could very quickly get ideas out of my head and into Asana, and those things still do exist. I just found that Todoist works better for me personally. So to Sarah's point, the tool isn't going to solve the problem. The tool will, though, sometimes be a better fit for whatever your methodology is. So the first thing is you got to find that system. And I know, David, you're a big fan of certain systems or thinking. Like you had mentioned Atomic Habits, which I'm a huge fan of that book. But like thinking of different ways that people do stuff, when you find that thing, you can then, you know, more appropriately choose the right tool. You got to have the system first.
Yeah. And I think you're right. You know, a notebook out of the box, like you say, just like Asana or Evernote or, you know, is effective, but you got to find a way to use the notebook. You got to find the pen. You got to find, where do I put the notebook? What do I put on the notebook? Do I use Sharpies? Do I have a different section for different projects? So you're right. Whatever the tool is.
Do you still use notebooks?
Yeah, I am.
Do you have a particular notebook that you like?
You know, what's funny is I use your traditional legal pad.
Yep. I love legal pads.
Like things we're doing now or larger things. And then I have those little mini 5x7 ones for the things that need to get done like today.
Like a temporary note versus a longer, more well thought out note.
Because it's in my face. Every now and then I actually create a calendar invite in Outlook for myself and I call it to do. And I bullet point the list because it bings at 7 a.m. And I know I have to do it. And I can always, if I don't, because I'm not good at, like, there's a task section of Outlook. Never worked for me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Never.
And I tried it. Okay. So I'm not contradicting myself. I did try it. It didn't work. I've found that an actual calendar invite, a meeting to myself that had the to-do list, did work for me. I can always move it to the next day. I can check off what I did, but I'm almost a caveman when it comes to to-do lists and getting things done.
We're such an interesting pair then, you and I, because I'm like, all of my systems are, I'm trying to push further into the future than is currently possible. I'm always as much up to date on how to integrate new systems together as I can.
Yeah, it works for me. And yeah, every now and then I find myself with 4 or 5 notebooks on my desk.
I only use one notebook. I have one notebook and I'm obsessed with it.
That's when I have to go, all right, time for brain dump, because I got way too many notebooks on my desk and I have to get this down to one. But I mean, that also, you know, it causes frustration, but the feeling when you put everything in one place, even if it's a friggin' piece of paper,
yeah,
it's just like, You feel better. Your shoulders lighten up. You just, you know, it just works for me. So,
but the key, right, is that you said it works for me. So when I meet with a new client, one of the questions I get every time, and I guess it's so funny to me, they say, are you going to make me do XYZ? Like, are you going to make me use an expensive tool? Are you going to make me get rid of my notebooks? Like, that is the exact way people say, are you going to make me? I said, the only thing I'm going to make you do is a thing that's going to actually work for you. I have clients who are on pen and paper all the time, forever. Like, they're not budging from that, but it's fine because we developed a system that works for them using pen and paper. Others, you know, Jeff and I have these clients that have big, advanced, robust, automated Asana systems that got robots and engines, you know, Zapier running around in the background.
Yeah.
Very advanced systems. They're all working. And that's what matters. It's like, is it working for you? That's the key. I'm not going to make you do anything, but I'm going to make you do what works for you.
Yeah. And you've also, as you guys probably know so well, taken the considerations, other factors in somebody's, whether it's personal or professional life and what they're dealing with. And, you know, for me, I've got a you know, kids in school. I've got a father that's getting up there in age. Certain responsibilities happen here and there, as well as other things. So the ability to find a system that works, that also supports your personal life, I think is huge as well, because as we found through COVID, that stuff can change week by week. And the ability to bob and weave is I think critical, even I won't say post COVID, but we're pretty much living with it now. So we've learned a lot of lessons, correct?
Yeah. And I think it's just, you can't separate personal and professional. It's not like when you're getting a good thought and you're, you know, you're out for a walk and you get a good thought, you're like, okay, I'm only going to have my business thoughts now. And then 20 minutes later, I can have my other thought. Like, no, they're all coming in haphazardly. So having a system that works for both at the same time is critical. You can separate them later and do what you need to do with them, but you're not living in a vacuum.
Right, right. So let's talk about, this is another myth, according to who you speak to. We mentioned James Clear, Atomic Habits. Mm-hmm. And there's two other books that I'm reading now. And one is The Motivation Myth, and the other one is Stolen Focus. Mm-hmm. But both of these authors dig into, and I'll put the link in the show notes, as they say in the podcasting industry. But it kind of falls on the same thing. One of the things, and this is why I say, I really think, and again, people discount it because maybe they haven't really dug into it, is that I think the ADHD brain is built for these types of ways of getting things done or achieving goals. And the one thing the author in the motivation myth says is that once you set a goal, forget about the goal. Now it's time for you to put the systems in place and the routines in place to get to that goal. It's interesting. I just talked about this in the last podcast. I spent 10 years at Special Olympics, and I was watching the Special Olympics USA games over the weekend. They did some highlights on ABC, and there's an athlete called Chris Nikic, who was the first Down syndrome man to complete an Ironman. And he wrote a book, and the book is called 1% Better. And the whole thing is just 1% better every day, because the way he got to complete the Ironman was just incremental progress, even if it was 1% a day. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts on how maybe people with our ADHD brains can get a little more comfortable and maybe understand that this isn't so far-fetched at all. This is the way we need to chunk things down.
Well, I would say we are, and I'm not going to speak as like the avatar for all people on the neurodiversity spectrum, but I will say, at least for myself, I know impatience is a thing, and that's because of the relationship to time that people with ADHD have. Forgive my daughter in the background for the moment.
That's all right. We're just an open book here.
Yeah, seriously. So, you know, between time blindness and time paralysis and all the things that come along with someone who has ADHD, it can be very difficult to maintain patience. And it also can be very difficult to maintain consistency across things. So the idea of getting 1% better, when I hear that, I think that tracks with how I think I've grown over a long time horizon. I've gotten a little bit better each year. And even with things like managing my ADHD and the task management calendars, I've gotten a little bit better over time every year, right? But how it actually looks in my head when I think about how progress is made for me, it's in giant jumps. I make absolutely no progress for 6 months, and then I make 25% jump And then there's no progress again for 6 months and 25% jump. So I don't know. I don't know if that's a way that we can get better at it. But I'm confident that it's really just a matter of time scale to be able to see the incremental growth.
Do you believe there was no progress between those 25?
No, I don't believe it. I think that it's more like if you zoom out on the graph, right? Mm. And you look at you change the scale of it, right? Sure, like there was a little bit here, but the scale of the big jumps is exponentially larger than the little jumps. So that gap in between feels like nothing because the exponential jumps are the exponential jumps. When I learn something, I do learn it over time. Sure, I get a little bit, I see things, I gather information, I collect over time. But the real information gathering stage happens in giant sprints of hyperfocus and like obsessive dopamine chasing, right? So when I get better at a thing, I'm usually going to put in like an obscene amount of effort for like a 1 week sprint. That's like generally how it's going to go. And then you might not hear about it from me for a while because I've moved on to the next thing that I'm interested in. Now, granted, in the background, I might be learning about that thing a little bit here and there. I am focused on the other thing. So my focus is on the next thing that I'm learning in that same sort of sprint-like method. So again, when you zoom out, it looks like a bunch of peaks with giant gaps in between, but there is a little bit better that's happening in between those. It's just, I think when you have an ADHD brain, at least in my experience of how I learn, it's giant jumps forward with like teeny steps in between.
I can understand that because, and again, you know, I talked life happening, you know, writing the second book, Overcoming Burnout. There were times where I didn't write for a couple of weeks and because of just things going on in the universe. But then I said, you know what? I got to block out this entire week to just be a freight train. So I can understand both scenarios. And again, I think this just comes back to what works for you. But I think
that's a really good example.
Yeah. I mean, life happens.
So when I wrote my book, it was actually kind of simple. So my book took, depending on which time scale you want to use, my book took 28 days to write. That's it. It actually took 5 years to write. It took 28 days over 5 years to write. So I sat down to write 28 times. Hmm. And the first time I sat down to write over a 2-day period, I wrote 18,000 words. Hmm. And then it was about 8 months to a year before I sat down and wrote another 5,000 words. Hmm. So like it was these giant, and sure, like I was writing blog posts and things that I could pull from, and they were ideas that I was kind of working through. So those were the little bitty bits that were happening in between. But again, if you zoom out, it was a 5-year window. And what you would see are these giant spikes of when I wrote these large amounts of copy. So I think that that's a really a good example of what I mean by, like, you know, the cadence of what it takes to grow as somebody with ADHD. It's not really, it's an average of 1% better, but it's not actually 1% better every day.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, I think I'm like you, Jeff, where I can operate in both modes. Yeah. So, as I always like to do, I want to just give people stuff to walk away with if they're still listening. Speaking of the ADD brain.
I think they are.
Come on, it's us.
We're very entertaining, so, awesome people.
In your experience working with clients, both with and without the different brains that we have, how do you, what tips can you give people to implement or try differently for things we think we cannot use? So give people some kind of actionable items to think about. And like I said, if it's the to-do list or it's the 1% better or it's what have you, how do they just kind of take a step back and say, all right, how, and again, you alluded to it a little bit about the software program and it's this huge monster, but wait a minute, let's just take a step back. So how do you give people some tips for just kind of hitting the pause button and really giving these tactics and habits the due process that they need?
Sarah, can you start with that? And can you actually answer two sides of that? So I think one, to the neurotypical folks that are listening, like what are the tips you have there? Like what are some things that they can do to make their systems work for them? Like yada, 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 that stuff. But I think given how effectively you work with me, I think it would also be helpful to maybe give some insight into the line of inquiry and the way that you think through working with someone like me and asking me questions to get things to work for me.
Yeah, definitely. So the way that I kind of tackle systems and recommend it is really to pay attention to what is working for you and what are you naturally like saying, I don't like that. Like, what are you gravitating towards and what do you really naturally want to run away from? And pay attention to like what that feels like for you. And we talked about this last time, but Jeff and I are very open and honest about our feelings, right? And even our feelings on software. I mean, the other day Jeff showed me something and I was like, I don't like it, right? And I have to express why and how that's making me feel. And it's not about like, oh, Sarah, let's talk about your emotions around using Notion. No, but it's about understanding why I'm feeling that way and how my brain is triggering in response to that particular software. I think it also happens with people. You know, we kind of naturally gravitate towards certain people and don't really want to work with other people for the same reasons. So I think just when you're starting to feel that reaction, pay attention and start to understand, I like things like this and I don't really like things like this, because then as you're starting to pick softwares, it's actually going to save you time. I don't like things that are like this. I love things that are like this, and start to understand that for you. I think that's going to just help you be more efficient with your picking team members, softwares, whatever it is. In terms of working with Jeff, a couple of things that I really tend to focus on is, part of the productivity system that I created is having an idealist area separate from an actionless area.
Yeah.
So Jeff is an exceptionally high idea producer, and I would say I'm a very high idea producer. So between the two of us, it is like fireworks on 4th of July, you know, going off in every city around us. It's like boom, boom, boom. So we have to, and I really kind of take on this role, be very systematic on that is an idea. We are saving it for later. Got it. Captured. It's over here. And then these are the actionable items. Now, from the actionable items, and this happened on Monday, we are working with a client right now, and we had a big meeting last week. Huge list of deliverables. It's probably going to take us 2 years to get this client through this entire list of deliverables, right? He also has an ADHD brain. So what did I do? I said, Jeff is going to do this and this client is going to do that by Friday. That's it. Mm-hmm. I don't even want to show you guys the huge list. That's my responsibility. So I can handle the list. I can handle the long-term plan. I can handle the vision for this larger project. But I want to, as the like project manager on this, essentially, pick out those pieces and just say, just do this. You're great at this. You can do this. Just do this by this date. This is what I expect from you.
Yeah.
Makes it a lot more manageable. And then the one other tip I have is, you know, that's kind of giving them one thing to focus on. The other thing is I make sure Jeff's okay in the moment. And what I mean by that is I was meeting with my director of marketing yesterday and I said, are you good? Do you need me to pause? And she's like, no, I got it, because I'm just going to take a bunch of notes and then I'm going to go think about it later. And I was like, right. And I ask that same question of Jeff sometimes, and he says, no, I need to pause. We need to halt right here. I need time right now to digest this thing. So as a leader, manager, project manager, whatever I'm serving that role in the moment, I need to know who's on the other side, who's receiving the information, and how do I need to check in with them to make sure that they're okay. I know that, you know, Brenda operates very differently from Jeff, and that's totally fine, but I need to change my behavior to make sure that they're both okay in that moment.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So I want to use that point to segue to start with. This is the fourth point that I have four different points to give as tips. They're all quick. But the first is to jump on that point that Sarah was talking about being, I would say, empathetic leadership is what she's showing in those moments, because what she's understanding is that I don't process the world the same way that she does. And I think that I try to give that back to her when I show her, look at this cool thing that I built. And she's like, I'm overwhelmed. And that makes me feel uncomfortable. Is we're being empathetic with each other and being curious, which is my first point, is to be curious, not dismissive. So Sarah does a really good job of also kind of covering for me in meetings when she, like it, the example that came to mind when Sarah was talking about this, we had a meeting with this client and we were going through some stuff, and this client has ADHD. So he's all over the place and like trying to do stuff. And he said something and I was like, oh, that's good. I got to work on that. So I head down and I just started working on a thing, and he's talking to me and Sarah's like, Jeff cannot even hear you right now. I need you to put that on pause. I'll capture whatever's need. Like, Jeff does not actually hear what you're saying right now. He's basically deaf at the moment.
Jeff because has I left was, the building.
I was locked in. And then when there was too much background noise, I was like, I got to go. And I just dipped out of the room because I had to go and be in a different environment to get those thoughts out of my head. And Sarah's like, she never questions any of that stuff. She questions it out of curiosity, but she's never like, oh, why do you do that? Like, there's no judgment there. There's no dismissiveness. There's only curiosity. And I was actually in a meeting recently, not with Sarah, someone else, where something came up and I said, hey, I just have a little thing that I would suggest here. You know, that graph, it's kind of hard for people like me to process if we want to make sure that we're being inclusive about this and that everyone can understand what's happening. I would recommend that you should also include like a graph so that people like me who process things more visually, we'd better be able to be included in the conversation. And the person that I recommended that to was like, well, we don't have a lot of time or resources to be able to do that right now. So we're probably not going to get to that. And let's not worry about that right now. And I was like, I literally just gave you a gift of letting you know what you could do to make this better for everyone. And you just decided that's not important when I brought it up as important. So don't be dismissive, be curious. The final two things, I would say one is something that Sarah does exceptionally well when we're working together. And I actually am calling this out because I recommended it to my wife just yesterday because she has a member of her team who has ADHD, is give people who have ADHD small chunks to do immediately. I need you to do this right now. So Sarah and I will be on a call and she's like, hey, okay, open up your email. I want you to go get that email. Okay, I need you to answer those three questions now. Yeah. Because she has enough experience to know that if I say, oh, I'll get to that, 3 days later, she's like, Jeff, where's that thing I asked you for? Because I get off that call and I have no idea what I just said I would do. I lose things within seconds sometimes. So I would say small chunks and immediacy is like a really good tip for working with people with ADHD. And oftentimes they'll appreciate it. Another quick tip on that, give people time checks. Hey, you got about 15 minutes left for this, right? My wife, every morning she wakes me up, she lets me know exactly what time it is. She's like, hey, just so you know, it's 7:10 right now. We have to leave in about 15 minutes. And that lets me know, don't go back to sleep. So final thing, and I brought this up earlier, learn about different productivity systems that are out there. Be really, really, really curious about what's out there because not one of them is necessarily going to work for you. Your goal is not to find a religion. You know, you're not out there trying to be like, I am a GTD adherent. You're there to look for what works and find a way to develop a system that works for you. I'm right now in the process of developing a system that is really that I use that I think most people with ADHD are going to absolutely love. I'm calling it Hyperfocus. It touches email, calendar, tasks, notes, and your drive, as well as mind mapping. And it works really well for me. But there's going to be someone with ADHD who's going to look at it and go, I don't like this part. Well, change it. Your goal is not to find yourself a new dogma to follow without question. Your goal is to find tools that work for you. And all of the tools that I'm currently using are a mashup of all of these different things that I found. I'm like, oh, I really like that. There's parts of Sarah's system that I love, almost the entire thing, but there's parts of it that are missing that I have to add in that take her system, which I think is more the umbrella parent overall way of thinking, that there's tactical things that I need to remember inside of that that allow it to work for me. So you're picking and choosing and finding things that work for you and build your system first, then pick your tools.
Yeah. Good stuff. What's the website again where people can find out how to work with both of you?
It's superproductive.com.
Did you say get superproductive?
Get super productive.
Yeah, get I didn't hear the get part.
Superproductive.com.
Yeah, yes. We're going to help you get super productive because action language, very important.
That's right. On the positive, action oriented. Cool. All right, folks. As always, we have a great conversation. We go off the rails every now and then, but that's just what. That's what we do here. So, but always good stuff, always good chatting with you, and always a ton of awesome advice. So, we'll see you next time, right?
Yeah. Anytime.
Cool. All right. Thanks, guys. That's a wrap, everybody. Thanks so much for hanging out with us and hanging out to the end of the podcast. I hope you've been able to take away something from our expert guest that you can implement in your life, in your business. And I value each and every one of you. If you like what you hear in the podcast, you like the experts that I have every week on the podcast, I'd love for you to hop on iTunes or your favorite podcast platform and tell us what you think. Give me a positive review. It helps reach more people. If you want to learn more about me, You can go to overcomingdistractions.com. There you can find all the past podcast episodes. You can find a copy of the book where you can get a link to Amazon or Barnes & Noble. So until next time, thank you so much.